Superman, welcome back in the trenches. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go as we get ready for the Houston Texans taking on the New England Patriots. I always say you have to get with someone who's knowledgeable, who understands the sport, understands the team that you're playing against so you can learn more about them. No better person to talk all things sports, really, especially in that region, than Christopher Price of the Boston Globe. This dude has authored more books than most of my listeners have read, and he's definitely very, very knowledgeable, and we are lucky. We're excited to get him in the trenches with us. Christopher, how you doing? It's ND Kalu down here in Houston. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for the nice words, my friend. Looking forward to talking.
Hey, thanks for jumping in. I know you're busy, man. Let's get right into it. I have a question, and I have thick skin, Christopher, so you can tell me that I'm crazy. I must be smoking something. I've been a huge proponent for Bill Belichick. When I played against him, I was like, man, this dude's a mastermind. When I watched him as a fan after I retired, I felt like he was the best coach in our era. Now that we're seeing what they're not accomplishing without Tom Brady, yes, I know he's still a first ballot Hall of Famer. Yes, I know he's still one of the greatest. But for me, Christopher, I'm kind of like, it's more Brady than anything else. Am I missing something?
No, you're not, and that has been the long-running debate up here for 20 years, really, but it's really kind of taken itself to another level over the last, 18 months or so. This is I'll be honest, too, man, this is a long-running debate. I have my 16-year-old son who believes it's more Brady than Belichick, so I'll start off by saying that. I still believe in Bill, I think, to kind of coin a phrase up here, because he's not just the coach, he's the GM. Now, I think sometimes Bill, the coach, is done in by Bill, the GM. But I think that you can point specifically to the situation last year, and really over the last couple games this year, where I think the Patriots have not had a good post-Tom Brady plan. And I don't know if it quite falls on Bill, the coach, or Bill, the GM. I think you follow me here.
Yep.
The idea that they've struggled, whether it's been Cam Newton, whether they've tried to piece things together at the tight end position. We saw them go out and spend an awful lot of money this offseason, getting guys like Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith and Matthew Judon, who I think is the best free agent pickup across the league so far to this point, four games in. But I think sometimes ultimately Bill the coach is done in by Bill the GM. I think Bill the coach is still really, really good. And I think, the latest example of that is what we saw last Sunday, almost knocking off the defending Super Bowl champions amidst all that hoopla. But I think Bill the GM, there's still some questions about where he is, what he's planning to do, the next step of this post-Tom Brady era.
Well, speaking of Bill the GM, he decided to take Mac Jones as your quarterback. He is the starting quarterback. What's your thought on Mac Jones? Do you feel like he will be the face of the franchise for the next decade?
Yeah, I do. I think he's done really well over the course, the first four games. I think, his real coming out party was on Sunday night where he, stood in there and, they had absolutely no running game. They ran for a franchise low, -1 yards, and they still came within a missed field goal of winning that thing. And so I think that Mac Jones has showed that you can put a little bit more on his plate than maybe some rookie quarterbacks at this stage of their careers. The results aren't always there. He talked yesterday about losing sucks, and I went back and looked it up. He lost three games when he was at Alabama, and he's lost three games so far and four games in the National Football League. So this is a new experience for him on a number of levels. But I think he's going to be okay. They just need to be able to put him in positions where he doesn't have to win the game. They need to be able to have those offensive skill position players, and we saw some of it on Sunday night. Aguilar, Bourne, Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith, Damian Harris. Those types of guys need to be able to progress to get to a point where the game is not won or lost. The game is not completely on Mac Jones' shoulders.
You know what? You just named all those names, and you brought up Judon, Christopher. And I was excited about the Texans maybe pulling off a victory over the 1-3 New England Patriots, but I almost forgot they got players on that roster.
They do, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Especially, there are names, and Judon, for me, has been, look, we knew he was good, and we knew that he was a talent, and that's why he commanded what he commanded on the free agent market. But I think putting him in a Bill Belichick defense kind of takes things to another level for him. He has been an absolute game wrecker through the first four contests. He really has. He's the kind of guy you have to account for in every snap. He's the kind of guy who consistently draws holding penalties. He can consistently get pressure on the quarterback. You need to block him with multiple guys. He is the kind of guy who can change the game for New England. And we're getting to a point. I'm going to be fascinated to see his end. And I'm glad we're talking about him here because I think I'm going to write something on this over the next couple of days. This defense right now is kind of Devin McCourty's defense. He's the veteran guy. He's been around for a long time, more than 10 years. You know, he's considered just the kind of veteran you want to build the defense around. Smart, steady, consistent, durable, all that stuff. I think we're transitioning to a point where this is going to become Matthew Judon's defense. He seamlessly stepped in here, and he fits so well with Belichick, and they share a football mind. Judon is the kind of guy who, you know, can really change things. And he, first and foremost, is on that list, like you mentioned. They have some players here. And it's just a matter of kind of finding that identity on both sides of the ball and getting things to mesh.
Speaking with Christopher Price of the Boston Globe, you can follow him on Twitter at CPriceGlobe. Let's stay on that defensive side of the ball. Some news that shocked us, maybe didn't shock y'all. Gilmore, 2019 NFL Defensive Player of the Year released. Was that strictly contractual or was there something more to that?
Yeah, that was contractual. They couldn't find a way to make it work. And, you know, we talked about all the money they spent in the offseason. They needed a little bit more flexibility. And so they went to him and they asked him to renegotiate. And he said, look, I'm not going to be able to do that. He's the defensive player. He was the first guy in franchise history to win Defensive Player of the Year. You know, he is considered, I think he's still considered one of the elite cornerbacks. And I think that he believes, and I believe personally, he deserves to get paid like an elite cornerback. And so they couldn't manage to get on the same page with that. It's going to be interesting to see how they kind of handle the secondary moving forward. J.C. Jackson, a very talented young corner, I think is going to move up to be the consistent number one. Jonathan Jones, a guy who's kind of a slot guy, special teamer, I think he's going to be in the mix. Jalen Mills, Bill had a lot of good things to say about Jalen Mills, who just came over from the Eagles. He's four games into his Patriots career. I think he's going to be an important part of it. I think Juwan Williams, a youngster out of Vanderbilt, who has been kind of on and off and got a couple of healthy scratches this year, I think he's going to be in line for more work as well. But yeah, it's going to be the Patriots were, I don't want to say they were dealing from a position of strength because they are relatively deep at that spot. You know, you can't really have too many cornerbacks, but it's going to be interesting to see how everything kind of shakes out for them at that spot moving forward.
Nick Caserio is a guy that obviously the Houston Texans brought over to take over as general manager. Why was he so highly thought of? Because when I think of the decisions being made, the drafts, the acquisitions, I think, okay, that's all Bill Belichick. Why one, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've been wrong, you know, once this year before, it felt like New England wanted to retain him, do everything they can to retain him, and two, the Houston Texans were doing everything they can to bring him over. Why is he, or why was he so highly thought of?
Well, he offered a counterpoint to Bill a lot of times. We talked about Bill the GM. I think Nick Caserio offered a counterpoint to him if Bill liked someone. And look, if Bill likes someone, Bill's going to go get him, you know. But I think Caserio spent enough time in that organization where, you know, he could offer, you know, a fairly authoritarian voice when it came to, you know, personnel matters. He's also versatile, too. And as a front, I mean, I know that he's a GM, but look, you know, he was a guy, he was on the headset on game day with Bill. You know, he could talk to Bill during the game. And I don't know many, you know, GMs, personnel guys who are afforded that sort of luxury. He was a coach a couple of years ago. And so I think the Patriots liked that versatility. They liked his background in the New England system. They liked the fact that he could do a lot of things. They liked the fact that, you know, he could offer a counterpoint to Bill on occasion. So I also think at the same time, it was time for Nick to move on and take on a new challenge. You know, he'd been here for an awful long time, filling a bunch of different roles, and it's time for him to become a GM. It was time for him to become a GM to kind of go from a guy who was kind of a number two or a number three in an organization up to a number one. So, look, I know he's had a rocky start, but at the same time, this is a guy who really had a major hand. I'm not trying to, you know, oversell it here, but he really had a major hand in helping the Patriots' level of success over the last, I don't want to say the 20 years, but certainly the second dynasty that they've enjoyed.
Speaking of having a major hand, you talked about Nick Caserio being the number one. He's actually the de facto number two. Another former Patriot, Jack Easterby, is really running the show.
That's
here,
right,
in Houston.
Yep.
How upset were y'all, the fan base and the writers, to see Jack Easterby go?
Well, I'll say this, as a writer and on a personal level, I enjoyed talking to him. Mm-hmm. I did. When we would get a chance to speak with him probably two or three times a year, I found him to be very charismatic, very engaging, very, you know, very easy to talk to. And you know, he was an enjoyable guy to converse with. That being said, I'm not sure how a guy goes from the job that he had in New England to the job that he has in Houston. I don't see how that connects, because the job that he has in Houston, I think when it comes to overall responsibility and being the number one guy, as you mentioned, that doesn't connect with the responsibility level he had in New England. So I don't know how all of that happened. I don't know, you know, all of the behind the scenes, you know, back and forth that went on there. I'd like to know one day, and maybe someone will write a book about it, but it won't be me. But like I said, on a personal level, I found it very engaging and very warm and very, you know, very easy to talk to. But I'm not sure how that guy became the guy he is in Houston now.
The way you answer that question, I could tell you're a stand-up, respectable guy. But tell the truth, like, not that you're lying. The microphones are off, when the cameras are off, are you and your colleagues up there kind of scratching y'all's head, like, "Hey, what's going on? What happened?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I could see Andy, and it's great because I could see a situation where he is able to charm his way into that position. Because, again, like I said, he's a charismatic guy, very easy to talk to, very warm. When you speak with him, he's one of those guys, Andy, when you talk with him, mm-hmm. it's like you two people are the only people in the room. Mm. And he makes a connection with you on some level where you go, "Wow, that was a great conversation I just had with that guy. You know, I learned a lot about him. And, you know, he shared some stuff with me." And you walk away from that conversation feeling good. And like I said, I could see him, through his own personal, you know, charms, charisma, whatever phrase you want to put on it, winning over the Houston management and finding his way into that job. It's crazy. I know. It's completely crazy. It doesn't make any sense at all for him to be the team chaplain in New England and all of a sudden be, you know, in charge of personnel in Houston. I'm making that connection, I don't get it. So yeah, I guess ultimately to answer your question, you know, when the cameras are off and the microphones are away, me and my colleagues are like, "Hey, how did that happen? Wait a minute, wasn't he just the team chaplain here, and now he's you know, calling the shots in Houston? I don't get it." So, you know, you have Caserio, and I think Caserio's background is well established, and he's a guy who has deep roots in the personnel field and a lot of respect across the league, and, you know, played a sizable role in helping the Patriots build that second dynasty. And then you have Easterby, a guy who's kind of like glad-handed, you know, his way into this position. I can say, like I said, it's crazy. It is. I completely understand it, but that's the way he operates.
Before I let you go, I love to read. I love sports. I love competition. I don't know anything about hockey, but why am I going to enjoy a history of the Hartford Whalers as I'm trying to order it right now as we speak?
Oh, I love it. Well, so it's not for pre-order yet. I'll say that. I'll let you know. I'll give you a heads up when it's available.
That's why I'm having trouble. Hartford, okay.
There you go. The Hartford Whalers were a team. They were in the WHA. They transitioned to the NHL. They had the coolest logo in the history of professional sports. I grew up in Connecticut, so I can say all this. You know, they had the coolest logo in the history of professional sports. They had a cheesy fight song, and they drew like the same 12,000 or so people every night from the suburbs of Connecticut. And it was this small, cool, like hipster hockey thing where you were a part of it. And the team was good for a little while, but it was on and off, and it just never really seemed to connect with the National Football League. It was really, and to put it in kind of football terms, it was kind of hockey's version of Green Bay for a while.
Mm.
And it was just this small, passionate fan base, and they just had it all going, and they were clicking. And they were literally on the cusp of breaking through in the late 80s, early 90s, and they dealt away some of their best players because the league was getting big and they couldn't afford it. They made some bad personnel moves, and they ended up moving to Carolina. But this is basically kind of a hockey love story between a state and a team and the players and, like I said, the logo and the song. And it all just kind of coalesced for me as a young sports fan at the time. And I've been lucky enough to find a lot of other people who feel the same way I do. It's been a blast, man. As a kid growing up loving that team, I've talked to like 85 people players, fans, media about that time. It's been a blast to do, and it's going to come out next year. So I will make sure that you get one of the first copies, my friend.
Please do. I actually want to buy it because I appreciate books. I appreciate authors, what it takes to put, like, let's not just say this because we're about to say farewell. Please hit us up, hit me up, let me know when it's out so we could, one, bring you back on, because that description, you got me pumped. You got me pumped to read it. So
the other thing, too, that's important to remember, there's a lot of stuff in there about the Houston Aeros.
Ooh.
The old WHA team that Gordie Howe and his sons played for, and then they ended up coming to Hartford. So there's some Houston stuff in there as well for the Houston folks.
My man, that's the voice of Christopher Price. Make sure you follow him at C Price Globe. Thanks for your time and your expertise, Chris.
Appreciate it. Take care, Andy.